Audio.
The old man was going to die soon. He knew it, and so did the others. They could feel the pain of old age, of a body's survival systems shutting down one by one. They panicked and wanted him detached, their mute cries coming through on the readings as a sudden increase in electrical activity. Readings the like of which no one in the redoubt had ever seen before. Murphy glanced over the shoulder of the hunched tech, whose fingers laboriously tapped in a code to trigger a programmed instruction. Except Murphy knew there was no code, no program.
Wallace will have to know. Hey, Stoop, why don't you answer when I say something? You know you have to answer to superior officers.
Murphy swung the tech around by the shoulder and drew back his arm to deliver a backhand blow, his favorite form of mild reproof. Each of Murphy's four fingers had a thick silver or steel ring rammed down beyond the knuckle joint. The index finger had a ring with the head of an old god, Elvis, his name embossed underneath. The middle finger had a skull and crossbones. The edges of the crossbone would make a satisfying tear on many an impudent mouth. And the third finger had a five-pointed star that had been awarded to him by Wallace in recognition of the manner in which he'd led the defenses on the last outsider attack. A lot of scum had been chilled on that day. But the little finger, that held the prize. A diamond cut into many sharp razor edges that could lacerate with only a glancing blow. A prized weapon handed down his line from the days before Skydark. Murphy relished taking out his anger on the Stoop tech, but halted.
What?
The tech's eyes were empty and dull, the nose misshapen into a blob of flesh with no septum. The mouth was open, jaw slack, and drool was on the receding chin.
Damn!
The tech had to have gotten some muti blood in his line somewhere. The colony deliberately stole women and some men from the outsiders in order to keep the gene pool from getting too stagnant. The trouble was, the rad-blasted valley still suffered from intense chem storms and the irradiated dust brought in by the whirlwinds. The poison became trapped in the valley and just circulated again and again, spraying whatever crops the outsiders could grow, seeping through the food chain into the animals the outsiders caught and ate. Murphy's men tried to get clean specimens on their raids, but sometimes it was just so hard to tell. Sometimes, you just got this.
Stoop bastard. You don't even know what I'm saying, do you? I'll just have to tell him myself, I guess.
Murphy found Wallace in his office, as always. Sometimes it seemed that Jen Wallace didn't move outside of the office, not even to piss her shit.
Sir, permission to report possible code red.
Murphy clicked his heels and saluted, his arm raised in front of him. As prescribed, he didn't look at Wallace until his superior spoke.
Sergeant Murphy, report received and understood. What's the matter?
Wallace was a big man, spilling out of his uniform, which was frayed at the cuffs and shiny with age. However, it was well and regularly laundered, like Murphy's uniform, the tech's white coat, and everybody's clothing. The colony believed in God and cleanliness, like it said in the good book.
Trouble, sir. It's the mechanism. One of the components is finally succumbing to obsolescence. Sir?
No such thing as obsolescence, Sarge. Recycle is the law. We have parts we can use.
Sir, not so sure about the parts.
You daring to argue with the good book, Sarge? You recycle. It works, always.
Murphy kept his jaw tight.
Stoop bastard.
What was that, Sarge?
Nothing, sir.
Wallace was in command because his father had been Jen Wallace, and his father before him. Just like Murphy's father had been Sarge Murphy, and his father before him. That's the way it was. But Murphy wondered about the strict reg on heredity. There was too much danger of muti blood infecting the ranks to keep it that simple. The tech was a good example. Murphy knew he was smarter than Wallace, smarter than nearly everyone in the redoubt. But the regs couldn't be broken. Never had been. That was how they'd managed to stay as the colony, while Skydark decimated the outside. The rad-blasted and scarred world the outsiders called Deathlands. The problem was, it left them with a triple-stooped bastard like Jen Wallace, too inflexible to believe that anything new could ever happen. He'd never actually been outside. Murphy had, and he knew that things changed all the time. Like now.
Sir, I really think you should come and see the mechanism.
Sarge, if this is a pointless trip and the recycling can go ahead as usual, then you're on a charge, mister.
Yes, sir.
When Wallace reached the tech section, puffing and panting behind the fitter Murphy, he was in a foul mood.
You, what's the problem?
Sir, he can't answer you. Mutie blood.
God damn! How many times do you have to be told, Sarge? That just can't happen!
No, sir, just like this can't happen, I guess.
What is it, Sarge?
Vital signs going down on number 3. He was the oldest of the bunch when the great experiment began to run. Got most major organs recycled and some limbs. Doesn't seem to be anything actually in need of replacement. Just seems to be fading out. Sir?
Recycle.
But what, sir?
The whole damn component, Sarge. If a part of the component can be replaced, why not the whole damn thing? Because the man is just one part of a larger organism, the mechanism. Recycle, Sarge.
But, sir, the whole mechanism is pre-dark. The old man is 187 years, 3 months, 2 weeks by old Kron time. 40 years older than the other components, true, but still, where do I find something of a similar age?
That's your problem, Sarge. You're in charge of SETCOR. You requisition supplies. Not my problem. What the Good Book calls delegation.
But the Good Book was written before the Great Chilling, sir.
Is that a problem, Sarge? Is that a problem, Sarge?
Well, sir...
What the...
The pre-dark alarms? Shit! It must be the Mactrans.
Don't be stupid. No one's ever got it working. Lost the know-how after the Great Chilling.
Who said someone got it working from this end?
Cutting Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Aselford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Gary Arthur, Catherine Poe, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands 51, Rat King. The jump had been as sickening as usual. Ryan Carter opened his eyes and felt a dull ache across the areas of his face that hadn't been numbed by scar tissue.
Oh, shit.
The empty socket behind the eye patch felt as if it were pulsing in time with his heartbeat, and he flicked open his right eye, the bloodshot blue watering. Mactran's jumps were painful and disjointing, the atoms of each individual body being disassembled, then flung across vast distances until reconfigured by the Mactran's computers at whichever redoubt was programmed to pick up the signal. The time between was taken up by nightmares and wanderings through the dark nights of imagination. The time immediately after wakening was usually filled with nausea and weakness. Ryan shook his head, trying to rid himself of the pulsing that thumped inside his skull. He looked across the dull green and cobalt blue walls to where the streaked armorglass ended abruptly as the wall met a floor inlaid with the discs that also peppered the ceiling. He reached out for his weapons, feeling his hand brush the stock of the Steyr SSG-70. Where that lay, his 6-hour couldn't be far away. His hand touched warm flesh, and he felt fingers instinctively grasp at him.
Ugh.
Head still pounding, he turned his eye to focus on Christy Roth, her flaming red hair coiled protectively to her head and neck. Her Mutie heritage gave her hair a sentience that acted as an early warning system, coiling close to her head when danger threatened. After a jump, it usually took some time to flow freely, but never before had he seen it this defensive.
What is it?
The hair set off a triple red warning in his brain, and he forced his disoriented reflexes to respond. Forcing unwilling calf muscles to brace his legs as he got to his feet, he looked around the chamber.
I don't know, but I don't like it.
Let's get the others. JB?
JB Dix, Ryan's oldest friend and a fellow traveler since their days with the trader, was beginning to regain consciousness on the far side of the chamber. His beloved and battered fedora was pulled down over his eyes, and his right hand moved instinctively toward one of his capacious pockets to pull free his glasses. Ryan could see that his breathing was steady, and that he was recovering from the jump with his usual speed. The armorer's other hand was held by Dr. Mildred Wyeth, a survivor of pre-dark days who had been cryogenically preserved before the big blow of 2001, then thawed by Ryan in the post-nuclear age of the Deathlands.
Ah, my goodness.
The stocky black woman's hair hung in beaded plaits around her downturned head. She was beginning to stir, raising her head and opening her eyes. Her checkmate ZKR-551 revolver lay in her lap, and before she was fully conscious, her hand closed on it.
Son?
Dean, Ryan's son, was still out. A thin trickle of blood ran from his nose to his top lip. He grunted as the effects of the jump began to wear off, and the first nausea of consciousness returned.
Dark night. My head's thumping like Mutie drums on a bad day, Dad.
Thought it was just me. Jack?
Everybody.
The jumps usually made Jack vomit, and he spat out the remains of the bile before rising to his feet, pulling on the patched camo jacket that carried his hidden throwing knives, and holstering his .357 Magnum Colt Python blaster with a fluid grace.
The bells. The bells, Esmeralda. Ask not for whom they toll. The bells toll for thee, my Emily. My Esmeralda.
Doc Tanner's eyes were open and staring, but they shared the same faraway quality as his voice. The jumps always proved the hardest for Doc, whose white hair hung in soaked strands around his face, streaked with perspiration and the blood that flowed from his nose and trickled from the corner of his mouth. No one knew how old he really was, trawled from the 1890s into the immediate years preceding Skydark by the white coats of Operation Kronos, a part of the Totality concept, which had also furnished the redoubts with the Matrans units. Dr. Theophilus Tanner had proved to be a problem. Such a problem that the white coat scientists had decided to use him for a further experiment, shooting him forward in time. Ironically, only a short time before their own lives were ended by the madness of Skydark, and landing him in the maelstrom that was the Deathlands. According to records the companions had come upon in the white coat hell of Crater Lake, Doc had been in his early 30s when snatched. The stresses of time trawling had made Doc physically resemble an old man, and his mind had a similar fragility that sometimes tipped him over into temporary madness.
How are you feeling, Doc?
Crazy old fool. Sometimes I don't know how his mind ever snaps back from the strain of these jumps.
Perhaps it never does, Mildred. And this scenario is nothing but the product of a disordered psyche.
Big words. Feel better? Right about the bells.
Gaia, I've never heard a bell quite like that before. Sounds more like a siren. A warning of some kind, maybe?
New redoubt. Could have an old alarm system. Maybe working off the same power supply.
Never heard one before. Why now, JB?
Why not? Stoop comp systems get faults all the time.
Not that often, son. There's something else.
The chamber. We've never seen one this spotlessly clean before. Almost like it's been swept out.
Which would mean someone lives here.
Your grasp of logic is most admirable, Mildred. Would it therefore be remiss of me to suggest even more than our usual caution?
Doc was still shaky on his feet, but he had the heavy Lamar blaster ready and his lion's head sword stick thrust into his belt.
Last thing we need just after a jump. Going into a situation cold like this is the best way to get chilled.
Ryan looked at JB and could see that the armorer had the M4000 in his hands and was checking the load.
Think what I'm thinking?
Guess so. Maybe one or maybe many. Either way, they'll expect us to come out blasting. It's our only chance. Bastard door is so narrow it doesn't give us a chance to spread quickly.
Can't stay like rats in a trap, Ryan.
Right. JB, you lay down covering fire when the door opens.
Right.
I'll head out and try to find cover. Mildred, Christy, you follow.
Right.
Jack, you bring up the rear.
All right.
What about me, Dad?
Dean, you and Doc take longest to recover from the jumps. Maybe buy you a few seconds. You come out after JB blasts again. Door that narrow, it's difficult to come out with covering fire unless you want your head blasted.